We continue to work with the book, The Anatomy of Healing Prayer, one of Ernest Holmes' books from the Holmes papers that were compilations that came toward the latter part of his life. So that's sometimes a little different than the quotes in Science of Mind. Sometimes they match exactly. So we get to flow with them as we go along. And as many of you know, I didn't find out I was giving this talk until less than 24 hours ago. And if you know how I function, you know that I tend to work on a talk for 2 or 3 weeks and didn't have that lovely opportunity this time. And we are grateful that Reverend Denise gave me almost 24 hours to work with when she asked me to find somebody to substitute for her. And I was laughing when Judy said, I mentioned how grateful I was. I got support from Judy and Dr. Carolyn and Reverend Hillary and talked to Reverend Maria. And Judy said, oh, we were just grateful that you didn't ask us to do it. And that was true. But I always want to be here for this group, and what it takes to make this group work is important to me, and I will give it my all, I promise. And so here we are on this subject of a chapter called Change the Track of Time. Change the Track of Time. It's a really interesting title. And as I read the chapter, I thought about some of the ideas he presented. And at the beginning of the chapter, he poses some questions. What is prayer? To what do we pray? Where do we pray? And how do we pray? And these are all great questions, and he gives a few simple answers. He defines prayer as an act based on the belief of a power greater than ourselves, which responds to us. So that answers the what is and to what do we pray questions. Where do we pray? And he said, we pray within ourselves because there is nowhere God is not. So whether we are praying in a monastery or a church or a garden or our living room or a street corner, we are always praying within ourselves, and God is there. And he asked, how do we pray? And he said, we pray rightly for all that is of the very nature of God, love, peace, givingness, and unity. So praying rightly is about praying in alignment with the nature of God. And we know the nature of God is health and wholeness and abundance and prosperity and joy and harmony and loving relationships. So the things that we tend to pray for are in alignment with spirit. We are inspired by that opportunity to align with spirit. So I looked at those questions and I thought, I want to add a question. There's a question that he didn't ask that feels totally relevant to me today if I'm going to talk about this. And the question is, why do we pray? Or more importantly, why do I pray? Because for over 35 years now, since I became part of Science of Mind, I've been doing spiritual mind treatment. And it's powerful. And it matters to me. I'm drawn to do it. I love to do it. So why do I do it? And that was what inspired me as I went through yesterday. That question occurred to me, But I was still kind of tearing my hair out a little, Bob, and I had to cancel going to a concert, driving down to Occoquan, maybe seeing Carrie and Brian and other friends to see Sherry and Jeff play. And that was discombobulating a little bit because we were both looking forward to that. And the calmness came over me that I wanted to feel when Bob said to me, "Beloved is ready to inspire you." And what a gift it is to have someone in my life who's here every day who can remind me that Beloved is ready to inspire me. You know, God's got my back all the time. And so I was inspired to post the note saying I was speaking today. And so I heard from Judy Carolyn and Reverend Hillary, and I talked to Reverend Maria because I wanted to quote her. And in the course of the experience, I was inspired multiple times last night by different things. And I want to talk about a number of them, but one of them was a quote that Judy Oliver posted on Facebook yesterday. John O'Donohue from the book Beauty the Invisible Embrace wrote, "A home is not simply a building. It is the shelter around the intimacy of a life. Coming from the outside world and its rasp of force and usage, you relax and allow yourself to be who you are. The inner walls of a home are threaded with the textures of one's soul, a subtle weave of presences. If you could see your home through the lens of your soul, you'd be surprised at the beauty concealed in the memory your home holds. When you enter some homes, you sense how the memories have seeped to the surface, infusing the aura of the place and deepening the tone of its presence. Where love has lived, a house holds the warmth. Even the poorest home feels like a nest of love and tenderness dwell there." Reverend Maria, that's what I wanted to quote. A while back when I was discombobulated for another reason that I can't even remember now, Reverend Maria said to me, "The walls of your home are embedded with every prayer ever uttered there." The walls of my home are embedded with every prayer ever uttered here. How many prayers have been uttered here in the 30 years that I have been in this house and that I have been praying regularly out loud with my women's groups, with my classes that were here, with my friends, with Sterling Study Group on Zoom, with my Ministry of Prayer friends from Celebration Center, and the prayers that I have said in my heart, within myself, all the prayers I've said out loud with my clients, the walls of my home are embedded with all of the prayers. Wow, that just blew my mind. The energy of that is the answer to why do I pray? That question that came to me, why do I pray? Why is it important to me to pray? Because it changes the way I see everything. Now, I was thinking about it, and I thought, when we begin prayer, we begin sort of praying because we think it will give us stuff or change conditions. The That's why we often make prayer requests, to get stuff that we think we don't have or to change the conditions of our lives. But the truth of the spiritual mind treatment formula that we do is to change our consciousness, because every treatment that we do starts out with the recognition step that says, what does God mean to me? God is love and light and peace and power and grace and wholeness and health and prosperity and vitality and energy and joy. God is all of that. And the second step is unification that says, I am that. What God is, I am. I am that. I am. Or I am that I am, is the way some people say that. I am that. I am. Every prayer takes us to that place of oneness, of wholeness, of knowing God right here and right now as me. And as I pray for someone else, I always say, I am that. And what I know for myself, I see clearly for this other person as well, or these other people, if I'm praying for a group or a country or the world. God is all of it. Makes me cry. That reminder is embedded in every prayer that we do. And that's why it's so valuable to pray. It changes the way we think. It changes the way we see the world. It changes everything. And I love giving talks, because even when I have very little time to prepare for a talk, things come. I open to receive inspiration and stuff arrives. And on Facebook yesterday, from two different friends, I got this story from Anita Morjani. She said, although I try to share my near-death experience, there are no words that can come close to describing its depth and the amount of knowledge that came flooding through. So the best way to express it is through the use of metaphors and analogies. Hopefully they capture a part of the essence of what I'm trying to convey in a small way. Imagine, if you will, a huge dark warehouse. You live there with only one flashlight to see by. Everything you know about what's contained within that enormous space is what you've seen by the beam of one small flashlight. Whatever you want, whenever you want to look for something, you may or may not find it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It's there, but you just haven't shown your light on it. And even when you do, the object you see may be difficult to make out. You may get a fairly clear idea of it, but often you're left wondering. You can only see what your light is focused on and only identify that which you already know. That's what physical life is like. We're only aware of what we focus our senses on at any given time, and we can only understand what is already familiar. Now imagine that one day someone flicks on a switch, and for the first time in a burst of brilliance and sound and color, you can see the entire warehouse. And it's like nothing you ever imagined. Lights are blinking, flashing, glowing, shooting sparks of red, yellow, blue, and green. You see colors you don't recognize, ones you've never seen before. Music floods the room with fantastic kaleidoscopic sound, surround sound melodies you've never heard before. She goes on to describe that amazement and then talks about it. The vastness, complexity, depth, and breadth of everything going around you is almost overwhelming. You can't see all the way to the end, and you know there's more to it than what you can take in. from this torrent that's tantalizing your senses and emotions. But you do get a strong feeling that you're actually part of something alive, infinite, and altogether fantastic, that you're part of a large and unfolding tapestry that goes beyond sight and sound. You understand that what you used to think your reality was is in fact hardly a speck within the vast wonder that surrounds you. You can see how all the various parts are interrelated, how they all play off each other, how everything fits. You notice how many different things are in the warehouse you never ever seen, never even dreamed of existing in such splendor, glory, color, sound, and texture. But here they are, along with everything you already knew. And even the objects you are aware of have an entirely different context. So they too seem completely new and strangely super real. Even when the switch goes back off, nothing can take away your understanding and clarity, the wonder and beauty, or the fabulous aliveness of this experience. Nothing can ever cancel your knowledge of all that exists in the warehouse. You're far more aware now of what's there, how to access it, and what's possible than you ever were with your little flashlight. And you're left with a sense of awe over everything you experienced in those blindedly lucid moments. Life has taken on a different meaning, and your new experiences moving forward are created from that awareness.
Wow.
Whew! Wasn't that wonderful? I just loved it. So she was talking about moving into that space in consciousness where we comprehend the oneness, where we feel the wholeness, the already doneness of it all. So the question of the chapter is, how do we change the track of time? And I think the answer is embedded in what she just said and what I talked about in terms of why we pray. We change the track of time by expanding our thinking into the timeless, eternal, omnipresence of God, where the prayer is already answered before it is spoken. That's what she described. It's already there. It's done. Abraham said one time, it is done. 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 And they repeated that 13 times. I counted them. It's done. So we pray to change our consciousness so that we can receive what's already been given. We open to receive. That's why we pray. We pray to open to receive. Now, that may not be prayer, as we think of prayer, may not be the only way to open to receive. It's one of the amazing ways, and the one that Holmes was talking about in this chapter. But I always go to my beloved books to see what they have to say about the topic. And I was talking about blessing, conferring blessings, feeling like you have the ability within yourself as God expressing to bless someone or something else. And so I asked beloved about conferring blessings. And I said to them, I can see how blessing is in fact conscious communion with the divine in ourselves and in each other. Abraham Hicks once told me that the squirrel and the tree don't need my blessing, but it does me good to give it. And beloved said, Abraham is right that the squirrel and tree don't need your blessing, but they are benefited by receiving it nonetheless, as you are benefited by giving it. whether you call it love, prayer, gratitude, appreciation, blessing, basking, savoring, counting your blessings, your loving focus on any object of attention blesses you both. I said, tell me again, B, if it's all love and love is omnipresent, what difference does my love make? And B said, that's the conscious communion part. You are waking up to the love that you are and seeing the love that is present everywhere and in everyone. You are allowing more of the beauty, power, grace, and joy to be revealed. And we said together, the timeless eternal nouns. And we laughed because that's a pun on the timeless eternal now. And we think it's funny to repeat that a million times. And so I said, I love the timeless eternal nouns, love, light, energy, wholeness, oneness, intelligence, joy, life, creativity, freedom. Those are the building blocks of the first step of prayer, that we say God is, and then we say all of these things that we know God is. It's so exciting. It is to me. That's why I've been doing this for 35 years. And Beloved said, each one of these words is a portal to an expanded experience of God. God as all that is. God in and as everyone and everything. Any one of those qualities can be discovered in any moment, in any place. I said, like magic, B. They said, revealing the divine truth of life is like magic. I said, shortly after we started this morning, when we were talking about